Well, beloved, we're making steady progress in the book of Acts. And so with that, let's turn to Acts chapter 25. Today's lesson is entitled, Paul Stands Before Festus, not Felix, Acts 25, verse 1. Paul is no longer standing in front of Felix. He's now standing in front of a new governor, Porcius Festus. And I looked up some information. I'm going to read to you about this individual. Acts chapter 25. Allow me to read verses 1 to 12. Now when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days, he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. So what's going on here? He finally takes up his new post. And after several days, he decides to ascend. Remember, as you go anywhere in any location in Israel, and when you go to Jerusalem, you are ascending elevation. And when you leave Jerusalem, you will find descending to wherever you're going, because Jerusalem sits up on slightly elevated land. So you're ascending up to Jerusalem, and when you leave, you're descending. So after several days coming to his new post, he decides to go to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul. Now remember, Paul is in the headquarters in a very amiable situation, left there by Felix. So Festus comes to town, and he must be somewhat informed about this very unique prisoner in his headquarters palace. So he goes to Jerusalem. And notice how the Jews quickly run to the new governor and drop a dime about Paul, and besought him and desired favor against him, that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying in wait to kill him. So Paul is in Caesarea. Festus is in Jerusalem. And their request to Festus is, hey, we got this outstanding issue with this guy named Paul. Felix really didn't do much about the situation other than keep him, you know, confined for 2 years because he wanted to please us. But at the same time, he was hoping the Christian community would raise up enough funds and probably ransom Paul. Would you please, while you're here, bring Paul down to Jerusalem, down from Caesarea, and bring him here. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly thither. Wow. So Festus seems to say no to the request. Okay? I'm pretty sure that Festus, when he arrived at his new post, it says that, you know, after about 3 days of getting himself unpacked, you know, getting his somewhat bearings settled, I'm pretty sure the case of Paul was kind of brought up to him. So he was well aware, I think, to some degree. Let them therefore, said he, which among you are able, go down with me. Notice, going down or descending. And accuse this man, if there be any wickedness in him. So what does Festus do? He simply pings. He tells them, well, if you do have a grievance and you want me to hear what you have to say, you need to come back with me to where? Caesarea. And when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down into Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. So verse 6 tells us he spent 10 days there in Jerusalem, probably greeting and meeting the Roman soldiers, the ones that were in Fortress Antonia, probably getting to meet the Sanhedrin members, the so-called movers and shakers of the religious community there in Jerusalem. And after those 10 days, he goes back. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about, laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. Underline. Just simply throwing mud on the wall, and the mud just didn't stick. Okay? While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews. Now, this is Paul speaking now to the new governor. Neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything at all. So Paul just has like a shotgun introduction to himself. I've done nothing wrong. I've done nothing against the law. I've done nothing against the Jews. And I've done nothing against Caesar. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure. So notice, just like Felix, these Roman governors had to walk a very narrow tightrope. Because if they went too far, they risk an uprising of the Jews and the zealots at that time rising up and attacking their soldiers, the Roman soldiers. But at the same time, he has to also walk a tightrope with Caesar. Now remember, he replaced Felix because Nero recalled Felix after his disastrous tour of duty and wanted to kill him. But it was Felix's brother that interceded to Nero to spare his brother, which he did. So Festus is here because Felix failed. Festus knows, I got to answer to Caesar, right? And on the other hand, I got to keep peace with these rabble-rousing Jews. Answered Paul and said, Will thou go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me? Oh. Whoa. Remember when Festus got to Jerusalem and the Jews brought their accusation, they said, hey, can you bring Paul down now and we can get on with the trial? No. How about you come with me back and then we'll listen to him. Now, Festus is throwing out this bone. Well, how about we go back to Jerusalem and put you back on trial? Then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. For if I be an offender or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. Here it comes, drum roll, I appeal unto Caesar. Paul used his Roman citizenship at this time. So when you hear Christians tell you that Christians are not to be involved in politics, not to be involved in government, simply stay home on the day of voting and let evil prevail because you're waiting for a rapture to get you out of Dodge City before all Hades breaks out, they're foolish, they're ignorant, and they know not the scriptures. Any one of you Christians out there that may be listening to me, which one of you is going to accuse Paul of committing a crime right now? He was a Roman citizen. Paul didn't ask to be born where he was ultimately born, in a free city that automatically made everyone that was born there in Cilicia, okay, there in Tarsus, a free-born citizen. He had that citizenship in God's providence. And here we see Paul using his governmental free citizenship ID card. Was he wrong? Was he committing a trespass? Was he slapping Christ across the face? Was he now a carnal Christian? Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, Hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Drum roll, unto Caesar shall thou go. Well, we left Paul in a holding situation in the governor's palace headquarters for at least 2 years. Back up, look at chapter 25, and look at verses, let's see here, look at verse 20, chapter 24, I'm sorry, and then look at verses 26, 27. Look at the last two verses of the preceding chapter. He, Felix, hoped also that money should have been given him of Paul, that he might loose him, whereof he sent for him the often and communed with him. So during that 2 year, the final 2 years of Felix's administration, he had a one-on-one with the Apostle Paul. Can you imagine that? No different than King Herod Antipas, who had a one-on-one with John the Baptist down in the cell. Can you imagine such an audience? To sit with Paul often for a 2 year period and hear the claims of Christ and the good news, and then to apparently squander it. But after 2 years, Porcius Festus came into Felix's room, and Felix, willing to show the Jews a pleasure, left Paul bound. And when you read the end here, you find out that was for a period of 2 years, a two-year stint. Felix, on the other hand, was playing with two separate decks of cards. One deck, he was hoping that money would be raised by the Christian community and to have Paul simply released. And what do you think he was going to do with the money? He wasn't going to feed the poor, and he wasn't going to build homes for the homeless. He was going to take it with him. Or he could confine him for a period of time. For what reason? Just make the Jews happy. If I keep Paul under wraps, that shows a little bit of working with the Sanhedrin, and they can keep the lid on those zealots, whereby there's no uprising, there's no sedition, and there's no, you know, there's no local warfare going on. So Felix here again was playing, in his mind, two decks of cards, two options, option A and then an option B. We also noted how Governor Felix sought audience with Paul during those years. However, in AD 60, Nero recalls Felix back to Rome and replaces him with a new governor, Porcius Festus. Okay? Porcius Festus. Now, I know you want to hear this. What about this guy? Who was he? Just like I gave you a little bio on Felix, here's something you need to listen about Festus. Matter of fact, Josephus, in his writings, mentions Porcius Festus. Porcius Festus, Roman governor, or the procurator who succeeded Felix Antonius. The only source of information concerning this man, Porcius Festus, is the New Testament, right here, and Josephus. Josephus writes, Josephus's writings picture Festus as a prudent and honorable governor. Now that's coming from a Jew. And bear in mind, before Josephus became the historian for Vespasian and Titus, two future emperors, he was a Jewish general, a general that fought against the Romans when the Jewish wars broke out in 66 AD. Felix's maladministration bequeathed to Festus the impossible task of restoring order to a province embroiled in political strife and overrun by robbers. So Festus was like the cleanup man. He comes in the ninth inning to save the game. That's why Nero recalled Felix. Felix had the place in shambles. The assassins, as the robbers were called on account of their small swords that they carried, would come upon a village, plunder it, set it on fire, murder whoever they wished. Now this was the turmoil going there amongst these robbers within Judea. Through the use of an impostor, Festus succeeded in ridding the province of many of these criminals, and Josephus cited in his writings. Okay? But his procuratorship was too short to undo the legacy of his predecessor, and under his successor, Albinus, the situation rapidly deteriorated once again. Porcius Festus only lasted 2 years. And then another guy comes in. And this other guy, when he comes in, brings it right back to the level where Felix had left it. So Festus didn't have the sufficient amount of time to really clean up Judea and to restore peace. Now, file that. We're in the early 60s, time-wise. The Jewish War breaks out in 66. So there seems to be this escalation between the Romans and the Jews there in Judea, whereby the lid to the pot pops off in 66 AD. And that's when Nero sends Vespasian and his son Titus to squelch the war that now rises up and will last for 3.5 years. One of the problems Festus inherited from Felix was the question of Paul's imprisonment. Unfinished business. Attempting to exploit the new governor's inexperience, the Jews requested that Paul be sent to Jerusalem for trial, hoping to assassinate him on the way. Festus at first refused their request, and upon his return to Caesarea, he himself examines Paul. Verse 6. On finding that the evidence was conflicting, however, and desiring to please the Jews, he asked Paul if he were agreeable to make the journey back to Jerusalem, verses 7 to 9. This is, they're quoting from chapter 25. But Paul, who knew well the nefariousness uses that the Jews would make of the favor of Festus, was willing to grant them, made his appeal to Caesar, verse 10. To this request of a Roman citizen accused on a capital charge, which is verse 16, which I didn't read yet, Festus had to give his consent. When King Agrippa and Bernice arrive in Caesarea a few days later, now, when we pick up in verse 13 to chapter 25, several days after simply Paul and Festus, along with the Jews, several days later, the last Jewish quote-unquote Herodian king and his wife shows up, and Festus invites this king and his queen, who is a Jewish woman, to hear the Apostle Paul. All right, you follow? Okay. Festus sought Agrippa's advice on this difficult case. At Agrippa's request, Paul was brought before him, again this is next week, for a private meeting. Festus's reaction to Paul's testimony betrayed his Roman mind and his arrogance concerning the Jews and the Christian religion, which we'll see in verses 24 to 27. Festus's friendship with Agrippa is further illustrated by Josephus's account of a dispute between Agrippa and the Jewish priests. Josephus tells us that there was a big dispute between the Jewish religious leaders and this last Herodian king. Festus and Agrippa were buddies. When the priests discovered that Agrippa could observe the activities in the temple from his portico, they built a wall to obstruct his view. Agrippa objected to this, and Festus sided with him. The Jews were therefore made an appeal to Rome, and with the result that Nero permitted, the wall was to stand. The exact dates of Festus's term of office are uncertain. Eusebius, this is the first Christian historian, 4th century, gives the date of his ascension as AD 56, but this is too early. His term probably only extended from 60 to 62 AD. And then, let me read this to you. Festus succeeded Felix as governor, and Paul's pending case is one of his first concerns. The Jewish leadership met Festus in Jerusalem and asked that he bring Paul from Caesarea. Their purpose was to ambush Paul and to kill him on the way. Festus hasn't even been to his new home yet, and he invites Paul's accusers to go with him to Caesarea to get things squared away. Festus could see the charges against the apostle were spurious, but wanting to have a good relationship with his new people, the Jews, asks Paul to go to Jerusalem and stand trial. This would benefit Felix in two ways. Now listen, this is like this game of politics. He would get on the good side of the Jewish leaders, and he could move the venue of the trial so he wouldn't have to deal with it, like in Caesarea. Paul politely tells Festus that as Caesar's representative, Festus needs to either make a fair decision or let him make his case before Caesar. After conferring with his advisors, Festus agrees to ping-pong Paul to Rome. What do you do in a situation when you don't want to mess with something? What do? You normally ping it with someone else. This is beautiful. The game of politics. Notice how politics and religion are both interwoven over the issue of Paul. And you got Christians today say, oh, I don't talk about religion and I don't talk about politics. Well, then what do you talk about? The weather? Notice in verses 24, 25, you got religion on one side, okay, false religion. You got Christianity on the other side, and you got the government right in between. That's being appealed to by unbelieving Jews that want to kill Paul. And Paul, as a Roman citizen, throws his ID card down and says, hey, by the way, I happen to be a Roman citizen. I have every right to appeal to Nero. And what does Festus say? Just like Caesar, just like Pilate washing his hands, then to Caesar, you will go. He's going to ping him. Now, listen to this as I close. I'm just giving you some background so that you get kind of a feel. Josephus had favorable things to say about Porcius Festus. He recorded that at the time Festus took his position, the Sicarii, those are the assassins. They were called the Sicarii because the knife that they used to kill people was not a straight blade, it was curved. And that's where they get the name, the Sicarii blade. Bandits were roaming the countryside, plundering and burning villages. They also mingled into the crowds of worshippers and killed people with their short, curved swords. Festus learned an impostor had gone to the Sicarii, promising them deliverance from their hardships. The impostor led the bandits to the wilderness, where Festus' forces killed the impostors and his followers. Paul's case was not the only time Festus allowed Jews to appeal to Caesar. King Agrippa built a dining area in his palace that, because of the elevation, looked down onto the actions taking place in the temple. In response to this and to the guard post that also overlooked the temple, the Jews built up the western wall of the temple's inner court. Agrippa ordered that wall to be taken down. I'm reading you from another excerpt agreeing with the history. Okay. Festus agreed. Take the wall down so the king can look over and see what you cats are doing. But then acquiesced to the Jews' counterproposal that they be allowed to petition Nero about the matter. So notice, Festus allowed the Jews who were not Roman citizens to make this appeal to Nero over the building of a wall to block King Agrippa's vantage point of the temple area. Kind of keep an eye on things. When the Jews returned with a ruling in their favor, all but the two who had been retained by hostages by Nero's wife, Festus agreed to let the wall stand. Isn't that amazing? Politics over a wall. I thought you might enjoy hearing that little bit of historical context. All right. Additionally, I read from G. Campbell Morgan's commentary on Acts 24, where he offers his idea that the book of Hebrews could have been written by Luke, who was with Paul at the time, who received it from the very lips of Paul during that 2-year stay that the Apostle Paul was there in Caesarea. Listen now as I read from Campbell Morgan, page 510. And these pages are so old, they're so yellow, okay? His introduction to this chapter. This chapter is part of a larger whole. Chapter 26 is needed to complete the story. So Campbell is telling us 24, 25, and 26 of this portion of the book of Acts is one large whole. The whole section is the account of Paul's last set address before reaching Rome, his final apologia, pro vita sua. This chapter is preparatory, and in it we find those matters which create the atmosphere for the final address of the apostle. So according to Acts, this is Paul's last address before hitting Rome and Caesar, his last official address to a representative of the Roman Empire. There are, however, in the chapter some outstanding values. We shall briefly survey the picture, taking the story as a whole, and then consider two of these special matters. Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus, and an attempt was immediately made on the part of the Jews to have Paul brought to Jerusalem. After 2 years, notwithstanding the fact that a new high priest was in office, so we're being told, historically context, that during that 2 years, Paul's in Caesarea, right, for 2 years, people coming and going and visiting, and probably writing the book of Hebrews, you got a administration change. You got a new governor, and during that same period, way in Jerusalem, you get a new high priest, all at the same time, converging. For there had been a charge in that period. Their hospitality to this man still remained. This attempt on their part was frustrated by the decision of Festus. It was a remarkable fact that Festus declined to bring Paul to Jerusalem, for almost immediately afterwards it is declared that he was anxious, as the new governor of that neighborhood, to secure goodwill of these turbulent Jews, and presently he suggested to Paul that his case should be transferred to Jerusalem. So this idea of transferring Paul from Caesarea back to Jerusalem to make the Jews happy, this was Porcius Festus's way of trying, again, he inherited a mess from Felix. Turmoil, sedition, uprising, going out with Roman soldiers and killing these would-be saviors who would rise up to vanquish the Romans. He comes into town with a plate of garbage, and he had to clean up that plate. And so try to put yourself in Festus's position. He got to please Nero, because Nero sent him there to replace Felix because the place was a mess. And then he has to deal with the people who would cause further mess in uprising. Try to feel the tension that he had here. But in the first movement, he declined. This is quite inexcusable, apart from the fact that this man was all the way being guided by God, and that here, as in many other instances which we have noticed in the study of this book, the touch of divine power was laid upon the heart of an unsuspecting governor in order to contribute towards the end. So notice how Mr. Campbell agrees that God does use wicked, evil men to bring forth his plan. The trial took place at Caesarea. Very few details are given because they were unnecessary. The charges made against Paul were many, as Luke declares, many and grievous. But they were not proven, and the apostles' defense was simply that of definite and emphatic denial of every charge they had brought against him. Then came Festus's proposition that he should be taken to Jerusalem, and there tried by a court of the Jews, undoubtedly the Sanhedrin, with a new high priest, in the presence of Festus himself. It was in connection with this suggestion that Paul made his appeal to Caesar. In whatever language this particular trial was carried forward, there can be no doubt that he made use of the actual legal formula, and having declared to Festus his reason, used the very words which might be used by Roman citizens under certain circumstances. And I'm going to do my best to read Latin. Sareum appello. I appeal to Caesar. That was the term a Roman citizen would use when backed into a wall, like Paul is, when it came to his or her defense. Basically, to Caesar, I appeal. In a moment, by virtue of the fact that he was a Roman citizen and that Caesar had arrogated to himself, robbing the Republic of its own powers in the process of the years, the right to final decision. Festus dared not commit him to Jerusalem. After conference with his council, he gave the equal legal form of answer, which is translated here in the words, "Thou hast appealed unto Caesar thou shalt go." And it reads in Latin, "Caesarium appellatisti ad Caesar ibis." To Caesar you must go. I love that. And Paul said, "I must also see Rome." Remember how Paul's desire was to see the city of Rome? God's going to get him there. And beloved, it's going to be an interesting journey for the Apostle Paul. All right? Now, let's go back to 25, chapter 25, verse 1. Festus comes to town. He's the new governor. He's the new government official. 3 days, and then off to Jerusalem. So if you look at 3 days, I mean, when you're setting up home, if you're moving from one home to another and you got an empty home and a truck full of all kinds of furniture and clothing and toys, 3 days may not be enough to get that home the way you would like it. So he gets to Festus comes to Caesarea, that's the headquarters, governing all of that land of Judea. And what exactly could he have done in 3 days? He could have met all the movers and shakers at least, maybe had a dinner, and then off to Jerusalem. And there, the Jews, okay, corner him. You got this man up there in Caesarea, Paul, and maybe Festus could say, "Well, I was briefly briefed on this guy and the accusations against him. We'd like you to bring him back down here to Jerusalem so that we can have a trial with you present." That was a ruse, according to the text. Luke is the one that opens up that little chasm and tells us that this was a ruse. They wanted Paul simply to be transported. And somehow, on the way of transport, they were going to kill him. Now, I'm thinking outside the box. How many Roman soldiers did that first Roman captain, when he whisked Paul from Jerusalem to Caesarea, he had an entourage of soldiers, right? Do you think that if Paul was going to be moved, there was only going to be Paul on horseback and one soldier on horseback and that was it? These Jews, I think, were kind of stupid. If Festus did agree to transport Paul from Caesarea to Jerusalem, it would be with an armed guard. So, would the religious leaders hire the assassins? The Sicarii with that special knife? I wouldn't put past the religious leaders to go to the thugs causing all the uproar with that special curved sword, pay them a handsome amount of money to intercept Paul and simply kill him. And since these assassins, now listen, have you been listening? Since these assassins were killing people willy-nilly, it would have been simply what? A bad rendezvous with time. Isn't these people devious? They would make good Democrats today. Then the high priest, verse 2, and the chief of the priests informed him against Paul and besought him. "We want you to bring Paul down, So here's this plot in verse 3. And desired favor against him that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying in wait to kill him. So here was a plan, a plot to kill Paul while, beloved, he was simply in transit. Simply in transit. Well, how about we simply go back to Acts 23. And I'm curious if we're dealing with the same people. And I think we are. Remember Acts chapter 23, verses 12. And when it was day, certain of the Jews banded together and bound themselves under a curse, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. And they were more than 40 which had made this conspiracy. And they came to the chief priests and elders and said, "We have bound ourselves under a great curse, that we will not eat until we have slain Paul." So this was a group within the Sanhedrin. It's not the high priest. He knows better. I'm not going to kill myself. But apparently this was like a faction within the Sanhedrin. These 40 individuals. Remember, the Sanhedrin was composed of 70 men. And the greater part were Sadducees. The Pharisees were in the minority as far as that number. So there's 40 individuals that have bound themselves to this curse, and they go to the high priest and inform him of what they've done upon themselves. Now that's chapter 23. You got chapter 24. Now we're in chapter 25. I'm kind of curious. Are they still fasting? Are they still abstaining from water and wine? Are they even alive? Remember, you get a 2-year period here that Paul was in that comfy situation there in the palace. You ever stop and think about that? Verse 7. And when it was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about him and laid many grievous complaints against Paul. And then Luke adds, which they could not prove. Now let's stop and think. The same accusations are now hurled against the Apostle Paul, but none of these accusations could stick. They did that to Jesus, and it didn't stick. They did that to Stephen, and it didn't stick. They're doing it here to Paul, and it doesn't stick. And in our own contemporary time, how many accusations have been thrown to our new president? And not one of them has stuck. So guess what happens, beloved? What do we learn here by way of application? If you're going to be true and faithful to Christ, whatever your calling may be, a Christian mother, Christian wife, a Christian man on the job, a member of your state legislator, and you're a Christian, or a member of city council, or a firefighter, or a policeman, a doctor, a nurse, a lawyer, a post-hole digger, whatever your calling is, if you're going to be faithful to Christ in that world that God has placed you, there's going to be times when accusations are going to be thrown against you, and they're not going to stick. Your enemies and your adversaries would like to see those words, their words, stick on you like Velcro. Then they will begin to put words in your mouth, like with Mr. Trump, taking a portion of his speech out of context, removing everything that came before and everything that came after, just pulling out a few lines to make him something that sounds terrible, but within context. There was nothing evil or malicious in what he said. They'll do the same to you. They did it to Jesus, quoting him out of context. Here with the Apostle Paul, accusing him of things which he was not guilty. And Luke wants us to know in that verse 7, which they could not prove. And beloved, when it comes to our new president, it's taken almost 4 years for many of these accusations to be proven to be false. Beloved, I want you to know that as if you're going to be faithful to your calling in Christ, and people don't like you because your salt is too salty, your light happens to be too bright, your life, your holiness exposes their sinful lifestyle. Beloved, the only recourse they have against you, they can't debate you. They may not answer your questions that you pose to them. They lack the ability to reason and to use basic logic to come to a proper conclusion. All they can do is assassinate you. Your character, your person, your being, even your words. Wow. Wow. Look now at verses 9. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure. Again, he's walking this tightrope. He's inherited a mess. He's answerable to Caesar, but he's also answerable to the people over whom which he governs. Answered Paul and said, "Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem, and there be judged of these things before me?" Then said Paul, "I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong." Now get this, as thou very well knowest. What was Paul meaning by that? Wow. Now again, please understand, Festus, you take the 3 days mentioned in verse 1, and then the 10 days that are mentioned in verse 6, and then you have the travel back and forth, okay, from Caesarea to Jerusalem, Jerusalem back to Caesarea, Caesarea back to Jerusalem. There's a little bit of time involved, and yet Paul could throw back to him, and there's no objection by the part of Festus. You know my accusations are false. You know that. And beloved, the people that are throwing these slanders and accusations against you, they know they're not true. Just like the Democrats, when they threw all kinds of things at our new president, they knew they were lying. The media knew they were lying. The celebrities in Hollywood knew they were lying. Pelosi, Schumer, Chuckie Schumer, they all knew that they were lying. But they're following the game plan of Mr. Hitler, the real Hitler. Repeat a lie often enough, and it will become the truth. For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. Now, that's strange. I thought Christians ought to be willing and able to die for Jesus. Paul here is saying, I do not wish to die for any false accusation leveled against me. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. Now that's that Latin phrase that Campbell brings out. And then the same Latin phrase would be given back from Festus to Paul. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, "Hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar you shall go." I imagine you could hear a pin drop. Boom. The volume went to absolute zero. 0 decibels. The Jewish people that were there, the religious leaders, must have gasped. Festus, quiet. Paul, quiet. And for a moment, total silence. Paul to Festus, "I go to judgments. I go to Nero or Caesar's judgment seat." Festus to Paul, "Then to Caesar you shall go." Dead silence. Dead silence. And then Paul was probably ushered back to his accommodations. The Jews went back to their little conclave, realizing that they failed to kill him, and they failed to get a hearing or a verdict from Festus. And then Festus, sitting on his seat of authority, look at verse 13, where we'll pick up next week. And after certain days, again, we don't know how many, King Agrippa, this is King Herod Agrippa II, the last Herodian king in the line of Herod, and Bernice, she was a Jewish, came to Caesarea to what? Salute Festus. Hey, welcome to your new job. It's now time for King Agrippa to meet the new governor. You know, palsy-wowsy, politics, sit down, food, drink, good time, talk about the situation. You know, one person answering the other person's questions. And then Festus brings up this gnawing issue of Paul. And that's where we'll be next week. Paul before the last Herodian king. Amen.